The Zone with Jason Anderson.
There's not a week that goes by where Coach Reed isn't going to get on you, man. That's his job, you know. Sometimes you just got to be like, take it easy, roller coaster tycoon.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Matt Derrick, Chief Digest, joining us, talking some Chiefs football, getting ready for the Colts coming up this weekend. Appreciate the conversations with Matt. Let's continue the conversation rolling. Some Chiefs football, some other stuff to get into as well. Kendall Gammon, presented by Freeman Health System, centered around you. Freeman Health System, your local hospital, joining your circle of trust. Crown Automotive in Lawrence as well. They are your Lawrence new and certified pre-owned Toyota and Volkswagen dealership near Kansas City, Olathe, and Topeka. Go experience the Crown difference at crownautomotive.com. Kendall Gammon, join us here in the Zone. Kendall, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Good to be here, as always.
Well, I appreciate it. Let's get into the conversation. One of the things that we've discussed throughout the show today, and I was very curious of your perspective on this, in that, you know, we've talked about the line for the game this weekend, that it's, you know, 5.5, and we look at, like, some college aspects of teams that might have look-ahead games or things like that, that if there is a quote-unquote trap game in the NFL, you know, if that even exists, then, you know, the Chiefs going on the road against a team that is their home opener has looked awful. They are 0-1-1 against two, you know, suspect at best teams. And the Chiefs are pretty good, and they've got Tampa next week. So if I'm describing that as a college game, I would 100% say trap game. This is one to look out for. So, you know, you're, you know, all your years in the NFL, do trap games exist, or are we not giving enough credit to these guys are professionals and that week is that week, and every team is the same because you never know any given Sunday?
You know what? I think trap games do exist, Jason. I think we're right to think about that. I just think the coaching staff, especially led by Big Red, is not going to allow the team to get into that frame of mind. I think even Patrick Mahomes talked about it a little bit this week. But they do exist. Yeah, are the guys professionals and they take each and every game each and every week? Yes, they do. And I don't know. I do always say this, though, and I've had the experience being on teams. Nothing worse than a wounded animal in the corner. And as they say, don't poke the bear, just shoot the bear. Just go there and get it done. Make sure your bad teams stay bad. And so hopefully the Chiefs will get on them early. But if they let them hang around, their home opener, you know, they'll have a good crowd, obviously. And you don't want to give them hope. You want to take away that hope as soon as possible. That was something that through all my 15 years, no matter what coach it was, that's something they always preached when we were playing a team that was not as good as we are, was dash their hopes as soon as possible. Do not let them stay in the game any longer than you want to. And you could say, yeah, you say that each and every week. But I think this week especially.
Does an opposing team's mindset ever come into the game plan or the preparation to where they are? You mentioned the wounded animal. You know, don't poke the bear, shoot the bear. You know, just eliminate their hope. So that, I guess, is obviously part of the mindset. But a team that is probably going to be playing more desperate football on Sunday is going to be the Colts. That they're going to be playing as if, like, if we don't get this done, our whole season can go down the drain. So this game is now the most important game of the entire season, not because it's the next one, because it can save our season or keep us going in the wrong direction. Does that sort of mindset of they're going to be playing desperate football, they're going to be giving everything they have on the field, and you'd better match that, I'm assuming that comes into the game plan and the preparation.
You're assuming right. That's absolutely the case. And I've heard that from each and every coach that I've played for over the years. You know, when a team, I mean, like you said, every game is important when there's only 17 of them. But when you're 0-1-1 and you're a team that expected to be challenging in the playoffs, and I think they still will at some point, you know that other team's going after it and they're going to do whatever they can, and there is a little more sense of urgency. I think that's just natural to expect, and everything you just explained, I would agree with, yes.
Kendall Gammon is our guest. He's presented by Freeman Health System and Crown Automotive in Lawrence. We talk some Chiefs football. They get set for the Indianapolis Colts. As you look back at the game last week, and I know we talked about it on Friday, but now, you know, sort of marinating for a week on in that win, that cultural feeling of being able to win a game. You know, I described it last week as, you know, the Raiders were always just win, baby, right? You had a number of games against the Raiders with Al Davis when he was still with us. Just win, baby. And the culture for this Chiefs team seems to be like they just know how to win, baby. You know, you can take off the baby all you want, but they just know how to win. Just win is one thing, but yeah, but they know how to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've been on both sides of that, unfortunately, and I say that because, you know, my years with New Orleans was when we weren't very good. My character building years, if I like to refer to them. And you know, I just come from the Pittsburgh Steelers where we played in the Super Bowl and you did expect to win every week, and that mindset was still with me, but I could sense it in a lot of guys that you know, when things started not going well on the sidelines, you could just see the body language and the faces, which here we go again. And so that does happen. And conversely, when you're rolling and you know you're good, I mean, that confidence rolls and you get to going. And then also when bad things happen during the game, it's sometimes human nature to be down, but when you're rolling and you expect it and everything, it seems like you bounce off of it a lot easier and you can continue to go out there and make plays. And that's exactly what we saw last Thursday with the Chiefs. And I mean, I've heard people say, well, you take away this play, we take away that play. I've heard you do that every once in a while with some rushes and whatever to make some points. But I'm joking, obviously. But the case is, they all count. I mean, if somebody wants to say, if it wasn't for that 99.5-yard interception, you're absolutely right, except it did happen. And it was a great play, and the Chiefs bowed up there, and they never gave up, even when it was at, you know, the 2 or 3 yard line. So you take those things into account for sure.
And you could say, like, if it wasn't for the 99, you know, yard interception return by Jalen Watson, but it's also not something to where Justin Herbert dropped back and just tossed the ball to Jalen Watson. Like, hey,
you're exactly
here you go.
Right.
Because
the pressure.
Willie Gay had to beat Austin Eckler. And if he doesn't do that and not in his face, then, you know, then maybe it's a better throw by Herbert. Maybe he sees that, you know, Gerald Everett was doing something and Josh Palmer was doing something else. If Austin Eckler gets Willie Gay, we might be talking about a Chiefs loss.
No, you're exactly right. And you also, you've got to be a defensive coordinator in Steve Spagnuolo who says, okay, I'm going to trust my young guys to go out there and do some things. And I don't know, if I feel like it's a little bit of a ballsy call because something could happen where somebody broke free if people weren't where they needed to be. Because as he mentioned early on, this is a young defense, and he hoped that their athleticism and their speed would make up for maybe some mistakes. But right there, they used the athleticism and the speed, and they didn't make mistakes. They were where they're supposed to be, when they were supposed to be there, and how they were coached to do it, and you saw the result of it.
Do you, I mean, in the locker room, as you're looking at around at different players, like this is a Chiefs team that is going to be reliant on rookies. In fact, rookies are playing 20% of the snaps on the Chiefs defense snaps so far this year, and it's a team with Super Bowl aspirations. And after the game last week, Patrick Mahomes talked about the defense, the young guys stepping up and making the plays, and especially Jalen Watson, but other guys doing that as well. Steve Spagnuolo has said, and you mentioned it, that, you know, guys got to go play. And whether it's next man up or these are the players we have, I'm not going to shade or baby them. I'm not going to protect them. They got to go and play. And Jalen Watson was one-on-one over there. He was one-on-one with A.J. Green against the Cardinals, and he made a play. Like, this is not to where anytime Jalen Watson is on the field, you've got Thornhill or Reed or, you know, whoever, you know, shading over the top to give him help. And I wonder if there's a feeling that goes on in locker rooms that is just like, you want to believe in somebody, but you also know, like, this guy's a rookie. And, man, I the last thing I want to have happen is, you know, we lose this game because this guy's a rookie out there and makes the wrong play. And now all this work and everything, because we've been doing this for years and years and years, and this guy, you know, maybe not his fault. I don't know if there's a lot of that would go on with the Chiefs, but I bring it up, Kendall, because the flip side has to be true, that once you see it start to happen, maybe the doubt that might have been there or the concern that might have been there starts to get washed away, and it's just like, all right, he may have been a seventh rounder, but that doesn't matter anymore. He's on the field playing for the Chiefs, and he's a cornerback. Let's just go play.
Yeah, you know what? You say that, and I think it's natural to think it. I will say, in my experience, I've really not seen that in my career. Generally, all that stuff takes place in the preseason because you're practicing so much and you're watching so much film. So by the time you get there, if they're on the field with you, you've generally developed a pretty good rapport. And the fact is, they, you know, at that point in time, if they're playing, it's because they've earned it, in my opinion. So my experience, I haven't seen that. The one thing I have seen is you see the veteran players, whatever that veteran player may be year-wise, really try to take some guys under their wings and help them out and talk with them and include them even more than maybe they would normally. And one thing that's a little bit offbeat, but I think is very important is with the rookies, I always thought the biggest thing was making sure they understood how to take care of their body if they were a starter and everything. Because, you know, let's face it, you don't play that many games in the in college ball compared to the NFL. And I remember my rookie season, we got to game 12 and 13, and I'm like, what the hell is this? I mean, and I wasn't even playing at the time. I was a backup offensive lineman and, of course, a long snapper. So the guys that are put in that position, and again, also the fact it's a mental game of it also, because in college you only get so many hours a week where, meanwhile, the number of hours you get a week in college, you get in about 2.5 days in the NFL. So the mental anguish and everything that goes on is just, I mean, it's mental gymnastics for sure.
Interesting. Kendall Gammon is our guest, Freeman Health System and Crown Automotive in Lawrence. You know, we finished up the conversation with Matt Derrick in the previous hour with some of the one of the themes that's been going on this week. What are you seeing from the Chiefs in some of the short yardage situations, and at least specifically with the Chargers, the struggles that they had throughout the game, going 1 of 7 in second, third, or fourth down and 3 yards or less? What are you seeing from some of those issues on short yardage for this offense?
You know what? I didn't watch it, honestly, as closely as probably I should have, but I felt like Creed Humphrey didn't have his best game, and they just weren't getting the movement there. It doesn't matter what play you call. If it works, you know, it's great play calling. If it doesn't, then you start to question it, and sometimes it just goes that way. But I just think the offensive line in general didn't get the movement they're used to getting, or at least the backs are used to getting. And it only takes, you know, one guy on defense to slip through and mess up a whole play, even if 4 other guys were doing their job on the offensive line. So it just happens some. And then I just think we, and I know you know this, but you have to chalk something up also to the fact of that's a pretty good Chargers team, which for the last 4 or 5 years, they've been drafting and acquiring free agents for one reason, and that's try to get by the Kansas City Chiefs, and which is why it makes it all the more maddening for the Chargers, I think, mentally, to come in there and still not get the game.
Well, if they get short yardage situation rolling this weekend, they would have earned it, because it's a Colts team giving up 2.7 yards per carry, and a defensive interior that's pretty darn good. So
it really is what they got. In DeForest Buckner that's in there, and then what's the other guy, Grover Stewart. Those are some big boys inside. And, yeah, this is a challenge. And, again, you know they're going to be called upon to do some things. I mean, that's the one thing they need to hang their hat on. Talking about the Colts, is they want to continue to stop the run to try to make the Chiefs as one-dimensional as possible. That being said, I don't think there's any team set up to do well in just one dimension more than the Chiefs, because of what they have, you know, top to bottom, left to right in the passing game. So even with that, even if they continue to play the run well, I think they're in for a long day. I don't think it's as big a win as some people would expect, but I still think the Chiefs are going to get this one. I mean, I see it. I was out there at like a 27-17 and possibly that last touchdown being trash for the Indianapolis, but we're going to see. That's a tough place, no doubt.
Visiting with Kendall Gammon, Freeman Health System and Crown Automotive in Lawrence. Changing the subject a bit from NFL to college, and just to get your thoughts on this, you know, KU is playing a big game this weekend against Duke in 2-3-0 teams and things like that, and they were almost double-digit favorites to start the week, and they have been showered with praise all week, and the players have been, you know, loved up, and Jalen Daniels, people are talking about, you know, one of the dark horses maybe for Heisman, and Lance Leipold's names being talked about with the Nebraska job and all of that stuff, and it's a KU team that, you know, people were wondering, would they even win 3 games this year? and all they've done is go on the road in back-to-back weeks and win against, you know, good opponents, Power 5 opponents, yeah. or Power 5 in terms of West Virginia, and maybe the best group of five team in Houston. So I'm just wondering, like, how do you handle the change, and maybe how difficult is it to handle the change from a team that's trying to prove their worth to all of a sudden it seems like almost overnight they've gone from a team from proving their worth to, hey, you guys are awesome and it's really cool and look at all you've accomplished and you've made it. And, you know, they've only played three games, but it almost feels like they've got to the mountaintop, you know, already. And now they're, you know, favorites by still by a touchdown to win the game against an undefeated Duke team. You know, you were on those, you know, 2000 to 2002 Chiefs teams and, you know, below 500 of those 3 years. Yeah. And then all of a sudden 2003, it was like, okay, what's this team 9-0? This team's legit. Like, what's the change like, and how do you handle going from we're just trying to prove ourselves to then you're not sneaking up on anybody anymore?
You know what? I've got a little extra insight, Jason, because I think I told you maybe one show ago, which is my son, Drake, he graduated from KU. He had an internship, and he was on the strength and conditioning staff. He's down at Pittsburgh State getting his master's now, but he talked to me about, you know, Lance Leipold and just everything going on there. He just talked about how, you know, Coach Leipold was a grinder and how they had a consistent message, you know, top to bottom on all sides, and that everybody was on the same page. And he thought, I mean, he was predicting that he thought they would do well this year, which I think is interesting. The other thing I would say from talking with him and hearing about things was Leipold's just not the type of guy that's going to allow the team to think too much, too highly of themselves. And I think they just feel like they've got too much to prove. So I don't see the letdown. I think you got to remember also, I mean, who knows what would have happened had he actually had a spring ball the first year he went. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing. You never had a coach come in that late in the Power 5 conference. So that in and of itself was crazy. But in the past, for me, when I've been on teams where you start to turn it around, you mentioned those early Chiefs years in 2000, you remember what it was like, and you understand that you didn't get there by just kind of going through the motions. I mean, you got to put in some work. You got to pay the piper if you want to have a chance to enjoy that win for 24 hours before it's on to the next game. So that's what I surmise from what's going on at KU. I'm so happy to see it. I mean, it's a long time coming, and you know, it should be an interesting atmosphere out there this week. I mean, you got a sold out game against Duke. I was wishing that game day would have been there this week.
Yeah, we'll see what happens in the future and what this game looks like. So yeah, it could be a really fun Saturday morning for KU fans there in Lawrence. Kendall Gammon, presented by Freeman Health System and also Crown Automotive in Lawrence. Kendall, you're the man. Really appreciate the time, sir, and always appreciate the conversation. Enjoy the football, and we will talk next week.
Sounds good. Take care, Jason.
Absolutely. There's Kendall Gammon joining us again. Freeman Health System, centered around you. Freeman Health System, your local hospital, joining your circle of trust, and Crown Automotive in Lawrence. They are your Lawrence new and certified pre-owned Toyota and Volkswagen dealership near Kansas City, Olathe, and Topeka. Go experience the Crown difference at crownautomotive.com. We will take a timeout. We'll come back. Mick Schaefer on the other side of the break. We'll hear from the Chiefs coming up at 1 o'clock. And, of course, we got the cuts before the show is over today. More Zone next.
You're in the zone.
Nonstop. Right hand, left hand, nonstop, Josh.
With Jason Anderson.
At the time, it is the only thing I want to do.
Yeah.
The next day, I 100% regret it every time.
Yeah.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The best part of those is that, you know, we hear them and we don't even remember the context of them.
I recognize that voice, but I don't recognize the conversation or...
Yeah,
and I don't even recognize the voice. That was an old AES liner. I pulled it over.
Wow, nice.
Oh, so you have no context for that.
None. So that makes sense. Well, I can't play, so, you know what? It'll come to me. I'll think of it. Don't worry.
Yeah, no.
Let me just sit here and rack my brain a little bit on this. It'll be perfectly fine. That voice is Mick Schaefer.
Have you ever talked about if Mick likes seafood?
Oh, God.
We probably have.
That should have died on the barren wasteland of AES. Okay?
Seafood.
So many things did.
Light that on fire.
Seafood?
Yeah, Mick loves seafood. Sometimes, you just ask him about it.
No, I hate seafood.
What? You hate seafood?
And so one time they ran down like every possible.
Do you like shrimp?
Seafood.
Okay,
here we go.
All
have,
fish?
Yes. We don't have to do this.
And so here's the deal.
We got to break on time, Josh. Okay.
I'm old.
We got Chiefs press conferences today.
I'm old and I don't have a good memory. So they started the bit again, like a week later.
A couple weeks later,
and I was like, This rings a bell, but maybe I was talking to somebody else, so I went through it again. And they pulled it on me again, like a third time. And finally, I'm like, wait a second, you're trolling me. And Joe's like, no, you got like shrimp, right? I'm like, no, like, wait, I've said this before. I don't like shrimp.
You got the memory of a goldfish, which
you
would not
eat.
Goldfish?
I would
not eat.
Okay.
You would not eat goldfish.
Do you like goldfish crackers?
I do.
We got one.
I like...
Is that seafood?
I like salted stuff shaped like seafood.
I love steak that's cut in a fish form. Then I will
I like
eat a lot
chicken
of that.
Nugget that's cut just like a ribeye. Okay.
Can I carve a chicken nugget that looks like a piece of shrimp? That's what I want. Mick Schaefer is hanging out with us here on Sports Radio 810 on this Friday. You know, we talked on Wednesday. Last time you were in with us, and we were leading up to a press conference that was going to take place out at Kauffman Stadium, and we were wondering what it was, and you said that you thought Dayton Moore was getting an extension, which I thought was a terrible guess, Mick. A terrible guess. No, you did not guess that.
Again, I don't have a good memory. You could be right.
No, that's not what you said. We were all right there. We all thought that this was an important press conference to be called at that particular time, and there was something bigger than just let's give a state of the franchise and more than just a downtown baseball stadium type deal, that it was probably a change of some degree. And so we at least got that part right of what we thought was going to happen. But right after we get off the air, the news starts breaking that it's Dayton Moore, that he is out. So, you know, going back to that time, I know we had talked about it. Like, Josh and I had spent the first hour talking about it, but it still hit differently when at 1:57, it's like, oh, this is real. Like, Dayton Moore is fired. Like, the era is over. What was your first thought when you heard that that John Sherman was, you know what, putting it on the table and saying, new owner here?
Yeah, so my first thought was, okay, what is it? Are they going to make it sound like it was mutual or maybe Dayton's walking away? No. This is John Sherman firing Dayton Moore.
My decision. And he's emotional and he's crying and a lot of other people are crying. And he's on record as saying, I still want to be in baseball.
Yeah. And so one of the biggest reasons why I didn't think it was going to be Dayton, because he had almost a year ago to the day, been elevated or moved over to that different position. And so my speculation then was, okay, this makes Dayton kind of unfireable, right? He's going to be this guy who's going to be still be out in front and be the face of the organization, but the decisions are going to be on the general manager. He's going to be the one in the hot seat every 5 or 6 years or whatever the cycle is in Major League Baseball, maybe sooner than that with the Royals. And so that's why it surprised me. And then we talked about, okay, it's probably not Dayton because Dayton would be there. And it turns out he was there for stand-up guy, classy move for him to at least say a few words there. I imagine at some point, I don't know if we'll all get him at once or it'll be individual stuff.
That's a good question, yeah. I know.
So that surprised me. And then John Sherman didn't mince many words there. And look, that's... I like Dayton a lot, and he did great things for this franchise. And look, we're not all privy to the day-to-day decisions and the differences between his way of doing things and JJ's way of doing things, which I think is another surprise, and how kind of like they made it clear like these are two very separate guys. Because I, for the longest time, thought of JJ Piccolo as Dayton's right-hand man. Look, he was, but... it's apparent now that he has a very different, maybe new school way of doing things.
We also don't know the dynamics behind the scene where JJ and Dayton working together, that JJ could have been the guy that Dayton had that was Dayton, we should look at this way of going about it. And Dayton goes, appreciate the information and the pushback. We're going to go this way, though.
Yeah.
So we don't know like that dynamic, that they probably agreed on a lot of things, but they might have disagreed along the way. And JJ saying, well, Dayton, we should go this route, man. This is something we should do. And Dayton was like, I understand that, but we're going, you know, a different way. Like that could have been the way of how that, you know, sort of relationship had gone. And even John Sherman saying that, you know, he said, I like what we did at the trade deadline, which was different than what we had done in the past, you know? And it was just like, you know, he was trying to point out in some small different ways here and there about trying to almost say, like, JJ is not Dayton. I understand the concern that's there of people saying you're firing Dayton, but you're then promoting his Dayton 2.0 without saying, don't worry, JJ is not Dayton. Like, mm-hmm. You don't want to come out and be like, you know, to just roast the guy and be like, don't worry, Dayton is gone. That was awful. This guy's much better. You don't want to go that route. So I think there were little parts that he tried to mm-hmm. include of saying, hey, no, this is going to be different.
Yeah, and look, we probably should have seen this coming, right? John Sherman comes over from a very analytics-heavy organization yeah. in Cleveland. And Dayton is, I mean, going back to his playing days, and this is a compliment in baseball, he was a dirtbag, right? He's a guy that was going to be the first one of the field. He was a guy after the game whose uniform was going to be muddy and dirty from head to toe. He was a guy that was going to stay late and put everything into it and value heart and loyalty and hustle and those parts of the game, which are still very valuable, right? But maybe embrace that side more than what baseball has shifted to, data-driven analytics, all that stuff.
So it's funny. Like, there were so many themes that came out of the press conference on Wednesday that we tried to get to them all in the first hour yesterday, which, shocker, we didn't. But we talked about,
me
like...
Me and Jason combining to not get to all the audio. It's
weird.
Shocking.
I thought there were three themes. I thought there was the, okay, this is why we're in this position. This is why I'm making this move. This is what has happened to this point and how it came to this. What's going to be different moving forward? That was a lot of the analytics and development aspect and changes that might be coming. And then the third sort of theme was this is the organizational sort of approach and view of where currently it is versus in the future. When he talks about tired of picking high, we want to be nice people, but our job is to win games, which is another kind of a little dig at Dayton Moore that wanted just to take care of people. And, oh, by the way, let's win some games along the way. Mm-hmm. John Sherman's like, yeah, cool for you because you're still cashing your check. But we need to win some ball games here. That's what we're about. And then also with his comment of, you know, Dayton talks about what a championship team looks like. I'd like to see what a wild card team looks like. You know,
that one got me.
I mean, so there were three different themes to me, and we didn't talk a whole lot of the analytics part of it, which I know a lot of Royals fans were head over heels with. Josh did a good job of cutting this clip that kind of gets to the heart of a lot of things. It's about a minute long, but this is kind of just all filled into one clip of the things that Royals fans are excited about and kind of the biggest takeaway that Josh had from the entire press conference.
The other thing that, if you think about some of my comments, we're talking about pitching develop. You know, there's a lot of data that's we're getting a lot of feedback right now on, you know, some consistent levels of performance and effectiveness. And so I do think that JJ, you know, we have a top-notch data analytics group led by Dr. Daniel Mack. I think sometimes perhaps that the data is not as prominent as maybe it should be in this organization. I've always thought that these, you know, kind of the traditional background and that our science people, we learn from each other, but I also think that has to be more prominent and we have to make more data-driven decisions, and that's not criticizing anybody this day. That's not stating a lot about the future, but that's what, that's really where I go when you think about decisions like this, because otherwise it's anecdotal, it's emotional, that's what we all react to. But if there's a lot of data that's telling us this is the right thing to do at the right time.
It's also, we need to make data-driven decisions. Also, there's a lot of data that's saying this is the right decision to make, which is we're going to go the route of making more data-driven decisions. And when he talked about the analytics, and I think what a lot of Royals fans, it was music to their ears, is when he said, you know, the data is not as prominent in this organization. There's a lot of things that's out there.
They have it. They're not using it as prominent in this organization.
Because there's three levels of analytics. There's having it. There's... being able to understand it and then implement it.
You got to disseminate, okay, what's good data, what's bad data, right? What should we be focusing on? What should we emphasize? Because it's almost unlimited at this point.
it's not like Russell Wilson, Mr. Unlimited, but it is unlimited. But it's having the data, interpreting the data, and implementing the data. Those are three different things that all are pretty big on their own. And what John Sherman is essentially saying is, no, we've got the data. The interpreting and implementing is where we are really lacking in this organization. And I think that's where a lot of people have come down with the Royals fans have said, yeah, just because you have. No, because they like, we got an analytics team. Awesome. I've got a nutrition team and I eat McDonald's. Okay. Just because I have it doesn't mean I utilize it.
I think it's even more personal than that. That's the fifth time I've heard that clip at least. And even now in this context, we're not going to see a total front office overhaul. JJ is getting a promotion for all intents and purposes. I'm hearing John Sherman the fifth or sixth time through saying we have the data. Sam McDowell asked that as a follow-up later on. He said, yeah, we got it. They have the data. I think they're pretty happy with how much of the organization is filtering and interpreting that data. Then you take it to the boss in a three-ring binder, and the boss sits on his stack of other three-ring binders, and you go, well, GD, what are we doing here, man? What are we? Hold on. We have everything all the way until it's time to use those to help inform our decisions. And I don't think Dayton was literally dropping a binder into a trash bin, but whenever you also hear the clips about being able to use that data to improve your roster, to swap out guys that are maybe at a position of need from another team, to maybe you have a wealth at a certain position in your organization, being more transactional. These are all things we've been talking about for years in this organization where it seems like the tools are there, but by the time it comes around to make the final decision, it stalls out, and all of a sudden, same boss, meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
What did you think of, so in that clip, but he also dropped in a, you know, data-driven as opposed to more emotional and anecdotal decisions. I mean, that's right to the heart of what Dayton Moore, how he runs his organization, right?
It is, yeah, the emotional part, the anecdotal, that was an odd word, I thought, that he picked right there. But look, and listen, baseball's always been the sport where you want to eliminate emotion, right? You don't, not too high, not too low when it comes to playing on the field. And so I think it only makes sense to maybe, you know, that sport be the one that embraces data more. I know there's a fight there, but as opposed to like football where, okay, you know, it actually does pay off to be emotional. And you can be, you know, Malcolm Rodriguez for the Lions, a little bit undersized and, you know, doesn't have all the measurables and all that stuff, but guess what? He's going out and making plays, right? And so,
Well, and I don't think there's anything wrong with having as much information as possible, right? Like, here's all the information, and then ultimately it's the GM's job to make the move. And so when that GM makes the move, you're hoping that it's as informed as possible. And maybe John Sherman is saying that, yeah, here's the data and the information, and it's pointing in this direction heavy, but the emotion is taking over in this direction, and we can't be doing that. And
especially when it comes back to a new stadium, right? You've got to have some sort of buzz around the club. Yeah. It can't be a team year in and year out that's like this team that's fighting to avoid 100 losses.
Yeah. And you know what?
To get a new stadium.
They're doing their September thing.
Barely. They've had a bad September.
Sweep the Twins.
Late to the game this September.
How sweep it is to be led by this Royals team.
Two more wins to avoid 100 losses, I think.
Yeah, that's right. So, and they got, Singer, you know? So
like a six-game series left with the Guardians.
They're perfectly fine.
You know how impressed I was with John Sherman's press conference?
How impressed were you?
I'd like to give that man some jewelry. Frankly, I'd like for him to win his own jewelry. I do think that would be ideal. I think he would like to win his own jewelry. And frankly, you know, his budget is something that I probably don't need to be concerned about. But if you don't want to wait on the Royals to get you a nice shiny piece of jewelry, either for yourself or for a loved one, well, let me send you the Rubac Fine jewelry. Because John Sherman is who gets the ring. He made a tough decision. Tough historically speaking for the Royals. And also, I think that press conference absolutely filled me with optimism. So he gets the ring presented by Rubac Fine Jewelry. That's where I went when it was time to get a ring for fiance Renee. Her name changed on the show, so you know it worked. Fiance Renee, spoiler alert, she took it. And it's incredible. The whole process was a legit, no pun intended, but accepted. It was a gem to go through that process with Hal at Rubac. He's got 4 decades of experience on this. So I went in just as a big idiot at saying, hey, I went to a vending machine. I put in 2 quarters and they gave me this. Can we do better than this? And then he walked me through the custom engagement ring building process. It could not have been a better experience. So if you're looking to get that done for the holiday season, Thanksgiving is close enough that Mick's wearing his Thanksgiving shoes today,
yeah,
which are incredible. I tweeted out a picture of those already. Thanksgiving's almost here. Christmas engagements, those are super popular. I did mine on New Year's Eve. That was fun. I would recommend it. Hey, copy my notes if you want. Just change it a little bit. I did like 12:05. It's technically New Year's Day. I just cannot recommend Rubac highly enough. It was a tremendous experience. The end product was outrageous. But the price tag wasn't. They'll work with your budget, your payment plans, whatever. They'll make this an incredible experience for you. So go check them out. Appointment only. It's local. They're in Overland Park. Rubac.co, RUBAC.co, if you want to go get in touch with Hal and the great people at Rubac. I really think you'll be incredibly glad you did.
John Sherman getting the ring and fiance Renee having her name changed, not to ex-girlfriend Renee.
Was it girlfriend Denise beforehand?
Did she change the whole name, or just the title?
Fiance Jennifer.
It was tough. No, it was girlfriend Renee for a long time. That doesn't sound as good as fiance Renee. Go to Rubac Fine Jewelry. And I don't know that there's any real French connection there, but there is for Renee.
I don't know if that was even French. Anyway, so
great point.
We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, continue hanging out with Mick Shaver. The Chiefs at 1 o'clock. Andy Reid. We'll hear from Trey Smith, and we'll hear from George Karloftis as well. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
There. Somebody was like, what's it like listening to The Zone? Well, you got to take your time to find the funny.
You take your time to find the funny, and maybe eventually it'll come around and sneak up on you.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, Shorty here, because we're going to take a break and then come back and be back in time for the what is expected to be 1 o'clock press conference with Andy Reid and George Karloftis and also Trey Smith. George Karloftis said this in the previous hour, Mick, that George Karloftis is tied with all rookies for the most pressures in the NFL with Aiden Hutchinson. He and Aiden Hutchinson are leading the league in pressures.
Stay
with
in that
nine.
Guy's back pocket. That's right. Statistically.
Difference is Hutchinson has 3 sacks. Karloftis has 0 to this point. But the other people.
It's like you come to Kansas City, you're not going to hit home runs.
That's right.
You're not going to get sacks, okay?
But the pressures are going to be there. The other players around Karloftis, because he's 15th in the NFL as well in total pressures, the other players all around Karloftis have all these different, you know, one, at least 1 sack, 2 sacks, 3 sacks, 0. It's got to change eventually. We'll hear from him coming up next.